It's the Day FM Breakfast with Em, Grant and Ed. We're doing another episode of our Ask Me Anything series. And this was something that I was really passionate about doing because the level of domestic violence related deaths in our country is at epidemic levels. And I believe we need to do something about it. And I believe in empowering women and helping women. And so today's guest is a domestic abuse survivor. She's very brave to come on and tell her story. Geraldine, welcome.
Thank you so much.
So before we get started, I guess we were just chatting off air. Why have you chosen to tell your story and revisit this trauma?
Yeah, I feel really strongly about the cases of domestic violence in our nation, and it's not acceptable. And I want to say to people, perpetrators, that it's not okay and the behaviour needs to change. And I also want to say to people that are stuck in that situation that there is hope to get out and there is a chance to get out, and the best is yet to come. You know, you can you can make a better life.
Yeah, and you're living proof of that.
Yeah, definitely, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I also feel really strongly about educating the wider community, and that's you know, less victim blaming and more
correct
understanding. And
there's been a lot of victim blaming going on.
Yeah.
Now let's talk about your story. It's very powerful. So you spent 5 years in a abusive, toxic relationship.
Yeah.
But it didn't start out that way.
No, I think when we first met, I was at a really low point in my life. Mm-hmm. And
what had been happening for you?
I just didn't rate myself highly, and I was working in the mining industry, which was a male-dominated industry, and probably surrounded by people who didn't treat women nicely and didn't talk about women nicely, and that sort of
bit of a boys' club.
Yeah, it kind of permeates your being, and you
started to believe the things they were saying.
And so I met this person there at work, and he was really, really charming, and really built me up and moved really quick and made me feel really, really special, and I just fell in love really quickly, very passionately and very quickly.
And there was no clue early days of what was to come.
Yeah. So in hindsight, when I look back, there were red flags, not towards me, but very early on, I saw flashes of a very bad temper and the way he spoke to other people.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't listen to my gut. And I was really chasing that intense love.
Yeah, and the euphoria, the wanting to feel better about yourself.
Yeah.
And that's interesting, not trusting your gut. Like, that's probably the first thing you'd say is, if you've got that gnawing feeling, you would encourage people to listen.
Yeah, and it's been a life lesson for me that when I feel something in my gut, I've got to listen
Act
to
it.
Yeah.
So you're together, you're in love, it's euphoric.
Yes.
And then, so did you get married? Or?
No, we didn't get married. We were just together. And I think for the first few years, it was mostly that I just saw his temper around other people, although he did in that time start to make me feel a little inadequate.
Okay, so he started tearing you down.
Yeah, started tearing me down a little bit. And then a few years into the relationship, I fell pregnant with our daughter. Mm-hmm. And it was at that time that things got particularly bad.
So they got worse when you were pregnant.
Yeah.
See, I thought you would have said he was going to be gentler with you, but
no,
that's not the case.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
So when you say what was happening while you were pregnant?
Like, he would pick on my appearance, and it was at that point that I would say that financial abuse started to occur. So I had stopped working. I had no income. I had to ask for everything.
So he was controlling you.
Yeah, very much so. Just made me feel very, very worthless in the relationship. And then when I went on to have our baby, it was then again that things got again a step worse.
It got worse.
Yeah. He always had sort of like an OCD tendency with the house.
Right.
And that got really bad. And
so when you say that, you mean if something was out of place, if it wasn't perfectly clean, you were punished?
Yeah.
In what ways was he punishing you?
There was a lot of yelling, a lot of name calling, and stuff like that. And then, probably in the year before I left is when he started to make me feel physically intimidated. And so during an argument, he may have, stood in my face or given me a little nudge and things like that. And then, it was just at the very end that I actually sustained injuries and things like that. So,
and how bad were your injuries?
So the time that I actually left, I had a facial injury. So I had a big black eye, and also a bruising up my leg and and a limp. So
yeah. I can see it's still very raw for you. And I just want to say again how brave I think you are telling this story, because I can see you've got to go back and relive that pain as you're saying the words. So what was the catalyst for you leaving? Talk me through that decision, because I must have been terrifying. You must have feared for your safety.
Yeah, definitely. And people say, people often ask why would you stay?
Is that the number one thing? Why don't you just leave, as though it's just click your fingers?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess that's the hardest thing for people to understand. And look, in some ways, looking back, I don't understand it myself. But he had such a hold on me that I just really wasn't sure how to get out. And I knew that when I left, it would get bad, and it did. He threw me through my daughter's room and through her baby gate, and she was witness to that. And she ran, and she was, when I got to her, she was crouched in a in a bathtub, crying. And I think at that moment, I just I just knew for her.
Of course.
Just had to,
you put her before your own everything.
Yeah. So it was that moment that I knew I was going to get out, but I was literally trapped in the house. And I talked him into driving me to my parents' house. Mm-hmm. So we got into the car, and he said that he wouldn't give me. I said, I suddenly thought, he might drop me in the middle of nowhere sort of thing. And I said, can I have my purse and my phone? And he wouldn't give me. So I had nothing. I just literally had my daughter and I in the car, and he wouldn't give me my purse and phone. And so I started to get anxious about that. And I was begging for my phone, and he was saying, no, I own the phone and this sort of thing. And it was at that point in the car, and my daughter was there as well, that he hit me across the face with the phone and said,
in front of your daughter?
In front of my daughter. And he said, here, have your fucking phone. So that's how I got the black eye. But even at that point, I still knew that the worst was probably yet to come, and it was. So
it got worse.
Yeah. So a series of events happened. I got to a medical center. I then got the police involved, and I then was admitted to hospital. Mm-hmm. And it was the next day that I went to court at 9 a.m. I had to be at court.
With a bruised face?
Yeah, with a bruised face, with a limp, and I had nothing.
And with nothing to your name, because he's literally stripped you of everything.
I didn't even have a bank account in my name. When I left, I had a singlet and tracksuit pants on.
Your daughter?
And my daughter. And so my mum dressed me right down to my underwear at court.
Yeah.
And that was very humiliating time.
But that seems to be what he liked to do to you.
Yeah.
Is humiliate you.
Yes, definitely.
So going to court must have felt like maybe one step towards, you know what, fuck you.
Yeah.
I'm going to take some control back.
Yeah, I was not then. I think I was just still really, really scared.
Yeah.
And so it was later that afternoon, the police prosecutor from court that day, mm-hmm. as well as a separate phone call from a police officer at the local police station, both called me and said, he's been here. He's angry. Don't be alone tonight, because we don't know what will happen.
The police called you and said, don't be alone. That must have been terrifying.
Yeah, I was really scared. And it was that afternoon I was in the car with my parents, and he ran us off the road.
He ran you off the road?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And was everyone okay?
Yeah, we were fine.
But how can the police not stop him from doing that?
Well, I mean, this is the thing. Like, I had an intervention order. I had done everything in my power to keep myself safe. And this is very common, is, you know, we see on the news that people, when women are murdered, that often they have been to the police or they have tried. Mm. And people will sometimes say to me, oh, be proud because you're not a victim, you're a survivor. But it's not really, I don't really feel like that, because I just feel like I'm just really lucky that nothing worse did happen.
But it's not either or either. It's not a competition. It's not a labelling.
No.
Someone is trying to deprive you of your humanity.
Yeah.
And he's supposed to be the person that loves you most in the world. And
exactly.
He's the father to your child.
Exactly.
So he tries to run you off the road.
Yeah.
And it keeps escalating.
At that point the police stepped in again, and when he realised the extent of the criminal charges that he was going to face, he fled. And
really?
And that, you know, that was really the saving grace for me. And I'm really lucky that it played out that way.
So have you had contact from him since?
I saw him at the criminal hearing, mm-hmm. 14 months after those, that stuff happened,
mm-hmm.
And nothing since.
Well,
which is good.
So I guess there might be people at your lowest point. I mean, what did you think was going to happen to you and your daughter? Did you literally fear for your life because of this man?
Yeah. So the night after he ran us off the road, I think I was like on the verge of having a nervous breakdown. I didn't sleep. Two of my brothers came and stayed with me at my parents' house. And at one point I must have gotten up about three or four times and gone running out to the kitchen, and my big, big 6-foot brother grabbed hold of me, and I just wailed, and I just said, I don't think he'll stop until he kills me, and I'm going to die, and you know, no one can help me. And, so I did. I really did feel like, and it took a long time for that fear to go away. And I still sort of live with a level of fear, even though I can kind of talk myself out of it.
Yeah.
And I know that that's really common for people that are in this situation, and I don't want them to think that, they're doomed forever, because I'm not, like, generally I'm really happy.
Well, let's talk about your life now. So how old's your daughter?
She's five.
Five?
Yeah.
And what does life look like for you guys now?
She's ace. She's really happy.
You just lit up. Like, your whole body's just opened up. You're smiling. I can see. She's your everything.
Yeah, she really is. I live for her. I live to see her happy. I've repartnered, and
oh great,
yeah, and he's beautiful. He's really kind and caring, and so I just feel really lucky. I'm back working full time.
You're not just lucky though. You're a strong woman, and
you
put your child first and yourself first, and what you left is a really. I mean, I want you to stop saying lucky, and I want you to acknowledge that you're an incredibly strong and powerful and brave woman. And, you know, I just think so many people will be listening now. And I guess what would you like to say to anyone listening who does fear for their safety, or perhaps they know someone in their family or in their work environment, they're worried for their safety? What do you want to say?
Yeah, I think for people that know somebody that they suspect are in that situation is to maybe like ask some questions about if they're safe. It's also really important not to judge them, because they're not going to leave until they're ready to leave.
Yeah.
But it's good to give people an option, and maybe that's just, you can always call me, or my door's always open, and things like that. And
there's life on the other side.
Yeah. And for anyone listening that's in that situation, I just want to say the best is yet to come. Like, you can get out, and you will, you know, it'll light a fire in your belly, and you will do good things.
Oh, you are an incredible human.
I know.
Thank you for sharing your story. And again, look, there is, if you need assistance and this has really evoked something in you, you can call 1-800-RESPECT, which is 1-800-737-732. It's the National Sexual Assault Domestic Family Violence Counselling Service. And again, Geraldine, thank you so much. This has been, it's been such a huge issue this year for our country, and we need voices like yours. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
No worries.